WICC 600.
And right now we are checking in with Julius Dudix, who is our morning show counselor here on WICC 600. Hey, Julius, how you doing?
Hi, Melissa. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Of course. Love having you on every week. And I think this is such a timely topic, especially because alcohol, let's be honest, has been a real problem throughout the pandemic. It's something that people have leaned on. They've found comfort in. And if they're lonely, they've been drinking because nothing is really holding them accountable at this point. So this is the time of year, though, that we typically see people relax more. They have a little more to drink with every meal, or they start to drink on their weekends when maybe they weren't before, or even on their weeknights when they get home from work. First of all, it probably sounds like a silly question, but could you maybe even talk just about why do people drink? I know that sounds like a very elementary question, but why is it, you know, when we have these big celebratory times, we just see a massive uptick in alcohol sales?
Sure. A lot of people drink, I believe, just to pretty much increase their own sociability. Some people train themselves to believe that they need a drink in their hand at a party to relax, and they're more sociable. They could talk. They could just feel more relaxed at the party. A lot of people drink to escape from pain. And so quite often in session, what I will ask the clients to do is to talk about that pain that you're trying to escape from. A lot of people drink because their parents drank, their grandparents drank, and it became an ingrained pattern of behavior. And it becomes normal to get drunk, once a week, twice a week, three times a week. And all of a sudden, it begins to impair their ability to do life in a healthy way. And that's my concern, because drinking, I've seen the effects of it with some of the clients that I've dealt with through the years, and it just affects so many, many families. Mm-hmm. and moms and children and grandparents and everything. It's such a travesty. Drinking is not wrong. Drinking to excess is wrong.
Well, when do you know that you have a problem?
Well, typically when it begins to affect your normal activity. There's a lack of interest in normal activity. It begins to impair your ability to do life in a healthy way. You can't say no to the alcohol. Sometimes people who are alcoholics are tired, irritable. Sometimes they wrestle with depression. And sometimes you, as an alcoholic, you can't even see it. And so one of the first things you have to do is to be really honest with yourself and say, hey, I have a problem here. But that's very difficult, because any addiction is very manipulative. You can manipulate yourself to thinking, I'm not an alcoholic, I can handle it. When you need a good support system around you, friends to really say, hey, are you doing okay in this area? And then you've got to be honest and say, hey, I need some help. It's mm-hmm. affecting my ability to be a better father, a better husband, a better person.
Where does that mindset come from, though, Julius? You know, from, like, do we know when, or maybe it's always been this way, that idea of when you're social that you should be drinking? And I ask this question because I find, so my husband and I, you know, made, you know, a change, a huge life change, if you want to call it that, in the beginning of this year, actually, where we're sober. My husband and I don't drink. We used to drink, you know, I'd say for more like, you know, occasions and things like that. My husband a little more than that. But we decided that we're not going to drink anymore. And if we go anywhere, you know, in the past, if we ever went to a party, since there's none going on right now, or if we went to any kind of social gathering, immediately people assume you're either pregnant or you're trying to lose weight or something very like extreme versus just, you know, like, when did it become where you're the minority if you don't want to drink? Like, you're completely casted out if you're that person that doesn't want to drink. And I think it makes it harder for people to not feel like they should be drinking.
Yeah, you've almost got to feel comfortable in your own skin. And you've got to love yourself enough to know that, I'm going to do what's best for me and for my family. And I'm going to move forward in life in a healthy way. Quite often you get into ritual behavior, ingrained patterns of behavior, and you begin thinking, gee, it's just the way I am. It's just the way. No, it's not the way you are. You don't have to be that way in terms of having so much alcohol, and you don't have to have a drink at every party. Again, I want to emphasize, drinking is not bad. Moderation is the key. But for so many, I'm going to say 8.5 million Americans suffer from alcoholism in one study, in just one part of the country. The issue is, Melissa, does it affect your ability to do life in a healthy way? And does it affect your family, your wife, your children? And how can you get help is the question. You know, what do you need to do to sit back and say, hey, I've got to be honest with myself. I've got to develop a plan. I've got to get a strong support team going. I've got to consider options for me to improve my quality of life. Mm-hmm. If it affects your quality of life, I guess, is what I'm saying. That's right. When it becomes the issue.
Well, I think that's why we stopped, essentially. We found we weren't motivated. We found that we would eat poorly. We found that we made just awful decisions, or it would change just kind of our personalities in a way that we didn't like who the other person was. I mean, right. You know, it wasn't where... I mean, we were going to work and we were certainly not alcoholics by any means, but I just think like even casually drinking, you know, just led us right. to being people we just didn't recognize and we didn't really like. Talking to Julius Dudix this morning, our morning show counselor here on the show. And what yeah. about if it's somebody in your family or a dear friend, like you said, who has alcoholic tendencies? Where do you even begin to bring that up? Because that's a very sensitive thing to say to someone.
Right. You really got to have the relationship established with the individual you're trying to help. And if that relationship is established, then you look for the right opportunity to be honest with the individual and to help them to say, you know, help them to look at themselves and say, hey, what am I really doing and why am I doing what I'm doing? And is the alcohol controlling me or am I controlling the alcohol? Can I go a week without having a drink is what I'll ask clients quite often. And when you can't do that, you know that there's something going on there that's controlling me. So the issue really is for the individual to help the individual acknowledge the fact that, yeah, I do have an issue and look for some specific evidence. And again, it's such a pervasive, manipulative type of an addiction because you begin to talk yourself into thinking, no, it's not me. I'm okay. When really the reality is you've got three or four loved ones around you saying, I'm really suffering as a result of your drinking.
Yeah. Now, Julius, this is something where it sounds like if you do have this issue, it's something that you definitely need support. You need a village. You need to get help to be able to talk to somebody about it. And I think you're one of those resources for people if they have questions about it. Where can they go to be able to reach out to you?
Sure. You can find me on www.barkbark.com or Facebook or LinkedIn or 203-243-7714. And for some, it's going to mean, Melissa, they need to perhaps check them into either an outpatient rehab or perhaps even a 30-day program or a 90-day program, depending upon the individual. There are all kinds of programs in Connecticut, all kinds of support systems. You can Google it. And I don't want to promote anyone specific, but there are a lot of people out there, a lot of programs out there that can help. The key is to get honest and say, hey, I'm tired of being this way. I just need to get myself together for the holidays, for my family, for myself.
Julius Dudix, thank you so much for coming on this morning. We appreciate it.
All right, Melissa. Have a good day.
All the Fairfield County news before anyone else. Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
And we are connecting right now with Glenn Lungarini, who's the executive director of the Connecticut Interscholastic Athletic Conference, also known as the CIAC. And Glenn, great to have you back on the show this morning. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. So first and foremost, Glenn, it was pretty big news for a second time this season. The UConn men's basketball team had to put things on hold because of a COVID case. First of all, what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, you know, we've seen this throughout sport, and I think it's just a reminder to people that while we haven't seen spread amongst teams from team A to team B, we have seen COVID spread within teams in sport. So, you know, there is transmission through sport, but it seems to be more prolific within a team. So it's not surprising to see that, especially at the college level where, you know, you have people from other parts of the country coming in to play games. And you just have a lot more elements to the college game than the high school game.
Is there really anything that people could take away, though, from UConn's news who think it's ridiculous to freeze sports at the high school level? I mean, UConn Husky basketball, I was saying to my listeners earlier, is It's such a moneymaker for Connecticut, and I think it draws so many people from across the country to not only come to school here and be part of UConn, but also we've got a lot of Husky fans. I mean, I've gone to places across the country where people are rocking UConn Husky jerseys or shirts or T-shirts or hats and things like that. So, you know, like the brand itself is very popular. And when you see that they're taking it so seriously, you know, what message does that send to, let's say, high school parents, even athletes who have fought tooth and nail to get back on the field or get back on the court? And it's not safe at this point.
Yeah, it's a reminder, Melissa, of what we saw, you know, 8 to 9 months ago when we shut things down in March and, you know, college basketball shut down. Their tournaments and the NCAA tournaments at that time as well, that, you know, we understand the emotion and the passion behind sports. It really is almost unlike anything else that we experience, the pride and the passion that people have and the teams that they support. But, you know, even with college basketball moving forward, it's doing so with very limited fan base. You know, the experiences we have to keep in mind. You know, I think there's a lot of optimism right now because there's the vaccines coming out, but we have to keep in mind how that rollout's going to be, and it relatively won't affect the sport landscape really to almost the summertime. So, you know, it's just a reminder to us of all the protocols we have to put in place. Yes, we want to play, but first and foremost, we have to think of the safety of the athletes, our schools, and our communities.
When you see what's happening on the college level, again, going back to UConn, does it make the CIAC take a step back and reconsider or reevaluate what they're going to do with high school sports?
You know, we always pay attention to what's happening at the collegiate level, but it's a very different game than what's happening at the high school level. And I think you've seen, you know, really the high school level probably, you know, be a little bit more restrictive than the college level has been. You know, we don't have access to the testing and some of the abilities to do bubbles and things like the college level, you know, has. But at the same point, we don't have kids coming in from, you know, other countries where, you know, every game that's taken place really within the bubble up at Mohegan Sun includes teams from other states. Whereas in high school sports, you know, we've made restrictions where you cannot go across state lines to play a game or have teams from other states come in to play. So we're able to create a different kind of system that, you know, hopefully protects kids. And really from the fall, you know, we saw tremendous activities in the fall. We had over 30,000 kids, and with the data we collected, very, very minimal impact in terms of COVID.
Glenn Lungrini is here. He's the executive director of the CIAC. And do you have any updates, Glenn, at this point on what the winter and the spring schedule is going to look like, or is it way too soon to start talking about that?
Well, the board met earlier this month, and, you know, right now we need to understand better where the COVID numbers are going through December, have a better understanding of what DPH and what the governor's office is thinking about sports from a statewide level. Right now, as you know, both, you know, on a statewide basis and through the CIAC, we're looking at January 19th as a potential return date for sports. So right now, that hasn't changed. That's what we're planning on. But of course, you know, we'll have to see how things play out over December and through the holidays, whether or not we are able to return at that point. That being said, we have communicated with our athletic directors to think about a 12-game schedule for the winter. So we think no matter when we start, it's reasonable that we can get in 12 regular season games on a two-week tournament. For the spring, we have really held that very sacred, that's the piece where, you know, our kids lost everything last year. So we're looking at an early to mid-April start for spring sports, and so anything that we do prior to that with winter and the alternative season that right now only includes football, we would want to be concluded before that so we don't take away from that spring season or impact it very minimally.
We're having a conversation on the show, Glenn, about vaccinations and how there are some places of work making it mandatory to get a COVID vaccine. I know, at least from my days in high school, if you wanted to play a sport, you had to have all your vaccinations up to snuff. You had to have your flu vaccine, you know, whatever the case would be your booster, all that good stuff. I mean, I think you need it for school too. But do you think that high school athletes are going to have to get the COVID vaccine? Like, will that be mandated for all high school athletes, do you think?
You know, I don't think that'll be the case, certainly this year, you know, and then we'll have more data and information and see what the recommendations from the medical community are moving forward. But when you look in and understand what the projected rollout of the vaccine is, you know, everything that you hear is the general population and public, you know, probably won't see availability to the vaccine to April, May or June. Mm-hmm. You know, and at that point, we're going to be close to the end of the season. So when we're talking about, you know, high school age kids, healthy high school age kids that, you know, are a demographic that seem to handle the virus pretty well, even if they get it, you know, they're not going to have access to that vaccine through probably through at least the rest of the school year.
But then if you go into, you know, like the 2021 school year, when we're hoping, you know, it'll be available to everybody by the fall of 2021, do you think a mandate would go in place?
We haven't had any conversations on that yet. We're trying to get to January 19th right now.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, we can with the information we have there. And, you know, so again, I think that we've shown, you know, we have a great relationship and work very, you know, very closely with DPH and the governor's office. And we also rely, you know, heavily on the Connecticut State Medical Society Sports Medicine Committee. So we'll let the medical experts, you know, give us their recommendations and understand from the medical community, you know, what best practice and that would be. I think right now, you know, when nobody in you know, Connecticut or the U.S. yet have, you know, received the vaccine, it's just too early for us to talk about what mandates would be with it.
Makes sense. Well, Glenn Lungarini, the executive director of the Connecticut Interscholastic Athletic Conference, thank you so much for coming on this morning and hoping to talk to you in the new year about where we go with sports next. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great holiday season.
It's Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Very glad to have back on the show this morning Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz, who's here now. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for coming on. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope you and your family are well. I heard that you folks may have had some COVID in your family.
Yes, like the entire family. My whole, our whole family contracted COVID. My husband, my son, my parents, my siblings, their spouses. Yep, it ripped through all of us. So, yep, we're all better, pretty much. We're on the other side of it. My grandmother, unfortunately, who also contracted it because she lives with my parents, she unfortunately did pass from COVID. So, yeah, it's been a rough November for our family, but we're taking every day in stride, just kind of waiting for the vaccine, you know, like so many others. So.
And the good news is that will be happening at the end of this week, mm-hmm. or beginning of next week. Our hospitals will be vaccinating healthcare workers and, of course, nursing home residents. So we are very excited about that first step in what will be a process that will take months and require a lot of logistical assistance, but we're excited that that finally is here and that the vaccine is effective as the testing shows.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, it's a very positive development.
Yeah, it really is. And I know yesterday, among vaccine news that we were hearing about in Hartford, I know also, Lieutenant Governor, you held a roundtable discussion, and you did it this week in regards to resources to help the homeless population here in Connecticut. First and foremost, do you have any kind of facts or figures that we could look at this morning? Like, how many people are considered homeless here in Connecticut?
So the point in time studies that are done show that, so on any given day, and the last time this was done was in the late summer in August, and it showed we had a homeless population of 3,033 people. And what's very concerning is the number of homeless students that we have.
Wow.
There's over 5,015 homeless students, and we are concerned now because the weather is getting cold. We had some snow recently, and the warming centers and the shelters now look different and are smaller because of I have a smaller capacity because of social distancing.
Right.
The good news is the Department of Housing has secured federal funding to provide housing, temporary housing assistance. So if people need to go to hotels, there are the resources to do that. But the long-term goal is to get people into housing that they can call their own.
Mm-hmm.
So to find more permanent solutions for families or individuals who are experiencing homelessness. And so we had a variety of folks at our round table that included people who run Salvation Army shelters or who find housing for people in different parts of the state. But for your listeners who are listening and they may know someone who is homeless or have a problem with housing, they should call 211. That is the entry point to navigate finding either shelter or a longer-term housing solution.
You know what I think is interesting, Lieutenant Governor, and I'm so glad you gave some of those resources this morning, is I think we have a complex as people. You know, I think we imagine when you say homeless, we're thinking of people, I think a lot of times that you see maybe like in New York City, or you see people who are just kind of, I think the term bumming has been used before. But I think what you're pointing out is, you know, a lot of times homeless people are not people who just gave up on life or who are lazy or who are, you know, broken down, if you will. You know, like students, I mean, those are young people that have barely even gotten their lives started yet. And a lot of times, you know, there are children, there are single parents, there are people who are trying to work multiple jobs and maybe just got laid off. Like, could you talk maybe about really what our homeless population looks like? Veterans is another one that we
see.
Yes,
veterans are part of that group.
Mm-hmm.
Young adults often, and I learned about this when I visited the Triangle Community Center in Norwalk. Often you have LGBTQ youth that are homeless because they're shunned by their family. It could be students whose parents are separated and maybe are in some part of the families in the DCF system. So there are a whole wide range of ages of people, families, and individuals who are homeless. And the good news is, you know, we have shelters for people to stay overnight that have a capacity of 783. We also had homeless people, more than 529, who were staying at hotels, which is actually a good thing because our hospitality industry has really been suffering. So some of the federal funding that our Department of Housing has received is to get people into temporary housing situations like in hotels while they are found more permanent housing. But this is a problem that ranges across families, it's individuals, and a good chunk are veterans.
And again, the resources, if you want to even just get started to try and figure out where do you go next if you're finding that you are struggling to make this work and you are in this homeless population, you can call 211, and that's just a good starting point to figure out where you go next. And Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, thank you for staying with this and looking at this, especially with the pandemic. I know a lot of people have questions if resources are still available with social distancing and whatnot. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.